Once the preparatory studies to inform the white paper consultation were over, it was time for the Department of Transport to put the show on the road. The regional consultation took place between July 2002 and 2003. Chris Kane and Mike Fawcett of the Airport Policy Division recall the process.
I remember 4 months of travelling around the country in a bit of a bandwagon. We had about 8 or 10 public exhibitions, including in some cases quite major exhibitions in a small village in the Midlands. There was a proposal for a new site option in the Midlands, and there were several additional exhibitions in the southeast. We tried to set them up in locations which would be accessible for the people who would be affected by the proposals to come, and I have the opportunity to talk to government officials and the consultants who'd been helping us to prepare the options and the analysis so that they could ask questions to better inform any submissions they then made. So we also ran a whole series of seminars for stakeholder groups, organised in different regional levels. I think there was probably about 40 or 50 of those. There were questionnaire surveys. The information was made available extensively on the department's website. An awful lot of people were sent summary documents. We tried to advertise through the papers. We tried to make it as open and as widespread in terms of awareness as we possibly could, and use it as a vehicle to introduce people to the issues and where they could find more information, so that when ultimately they came to respond to the various consultation documents, they could do so on a well-informed basis.
And this was something that was obviously happening at a number of different levels. I mean, on the one hand, you might, in one of these exhibitions, you might find yourself talking to a local resident who was just an ordinary member of the public, but you might also, especially in the seminars with stakeholders, have a sort of quite in-depth, technical, highly informed discussion. So it was a consultation on a number of different levels. You know, we tried to structure the material so that we were presenting the sort of basic proposition, basic options clearly, but with supporting analysis in depth for those who wanted that and could use it. So it was a bit like an onion skin in some ways, almost as painful too. And, you know, even although in the consultation documents we didn't set out the full range of options we'd looked at, the reports on the full range of options were all available in sort of hard copy and on the website, so that if people wanted to sort of get more information, even on options that were not being put forward, they could see that and see the comparative appraisal that had been done.
In March 2003, we interviewed some of the stakeholders who were party to the consultation at Stansted. What follows is what they had to say about the consultation when it was in full flow. Even then, it was clear to some stakeholders that, while the technical discussions on the various options may have taken place at a range of levels, some of the options put to the regions to consider were being seen as options for expansion of aviation nationally, which would have impacts way beyond the regions being consulted. Mark McLennan, an independent environmental and aviation consultant, described the options on the table for the Stansted consultation.
Nationally, there are various options, and the consultation exercise deals initially with regional options. The South East is arguably the most pressing in terms of the allocation of those options, because traditionally that's where the big airports have grown in the South East of England. So obviously we're considering Heathrow, Gatwick and Stansted, but also new options, potential new airport options. The role of Stansted in all this is critical, insofar that the government consultation options provide the consideration for up to 3 new runways, which is a huge potential expansion. The addition of a single runway to an airport is a huge expansion all by itself. So new runways are potentially now proposed for Heathrow, Gatwick and Stansted. Now, that sort of increase in infrastructure is a huge project and clearly has very significant environmental and social consequences. So in consideration of that huge increase in capacity, clearly there has to be a number of questions asked about what that will do, both positively and negatively, both regionally, and what effects that will have nationally. There's an interesting debate now about how much regional aviation should be accommodated. So if you live in the northwest of England, the northeast of England, the Midlands, ought those regions not to provide more facilities and capacity for residents, rather than having people, as traditionally has been the case, of course, in England, travel to the southeast to make their journeys abroad?
The stakeholders taking part in the consultation represented various different interest groups, each of whom brought their own agenda to the process. Natalie Blaken represented the East of England Development Agency.
Airports are a fundamental piece of infrastructure for a modern economy. They're a clear economic driver for economic growth, particularly in the East of England, where we have a very strong knowledge-based economy. The second point of that is that it is a catalyst for job growth. Although generally within the East of England we are doing very well, there are particular areas within our region which do suffer from economic need and are identified as priority areas for economic regeneration. And these particularly relate to places like Harlow, the Lee Valley, and Luton and Dunstable, which have locations close to airports. In terms of economic growth as well, airports do provide an attractive inward investment offer. If we can offer more international connections, then clearly it provides an additional offer to businesses. And we also need to provide for freight and cargo for our businesses. So there are four primary drivers there that would necessitate airport expansion.
But not everybody agreed about the economic benefits to the region that expansion at Stansted would bring. Mark McLennan again.
The current setup at Stansted probably provides fairly robust capacity to provide regional needs. The problem comes when, as part of the London airport system, Stansted will be considered as an important contributor to that overall system in the southeast and nationally. Then the arguments start that, well, increased capacity at Stansted don't bring necessarily with them important economic ingredients. It could be argued that the region currently is well off economically and therefore doesn't really need new transport links. But I think the reality is that Stansted is being considered as part of potentially increasing national capacity. And I think the debate at Stansted needs to take place in that context.
Certainly some regional stakeholders felt that the impacts of expansion aimed at increasing national capacity had no justification regionally. Norman Mead was the General Secretary of Stop Stansted Expansion.
The wider aspect is of induced development, the impact of that on the rural areas here. Airport development, on the one hand, and what it will induce, what it will need to accommodate all the people, the employees, from the airport expansion itself, from Mr. Prescott's perishing prefabs, as some people call them, the 250,000 low-cost houses that have got to be accommodated somewhere in this area. All of this, we feel, would have a very adverse effect on an area of low unemployment and high economic activity. We're not a depressed area at all. We're a successful area in many senses. Why do we need all this?
Even those promoting the benefits of airport expansion recognise that these had to be balanced with any environmental consequences. Natalie Blaken again.
The East of England Development Agency is looking to maximise the economic and social benefits of airport expansion, but certainly within environmental constraints. We're not promoting growth at any cost. We have been speaking to businesses within the region who are very keen to secure the quality of the environment that they have at the moment. They live and work within the region, and the quality of the environment that we offer within the East of England is very important in terms of attracting inward investment. So it's not growth at any cost, and it has to be assessed against all of the remits of sustainable development. So from the East of England Development Agency's point of view, we haven't gone for full growth at all of the airports. We've taken a view as to what are the economic and social benefits of airport expansion measured against those environmental consequences.
But there was no getting away from the fact that the environmental consequences of airport expansion, on the scale being considered at Stansted, would be vast. Mark McLennan.
There's no doubt that the expansion of any airport, provision of any significant new infrastructural development, like a runway or a terminal, brings with it very significant environmental consequences. We're looking at very major development projects here. So the development itself is going to cause ecological landscape issues. The issues that local people will be most concerned with, of course, is the increase in noise and potential consequences on local air quality. And there can be no argument that with expanded airports, with new runways, those problems become more severe, and those are problems which clearly need to be addressed as a consequence of and as a significance of that expansion.
As well as the environmental impacts on people from noise and pollution, Norman Mead was also concerned about the impacts on heritage and biodiversity in the area around Stansted.
If you take the standard environmental features, heritage features of Uttlesford, be they listed buildings, conservation areas, areas of special landscape value, listed lanes, protected hedgerows, all of those things, and you tot them up, and you do the same for the other 14, I think it was, districts of Essex. This district of Uttlesford is either top of the list or in second place on every count, and it does give a measure of what is at risk, the irreplaceable assets of our heritage that will be wiped away. Current proposals here wipe away 64 listed buildings for a start, just like that. And Hatfield Forest on the perimeter of all this would be untenable as a recreational area, a scientific area, which it is, a site of special scientific value. Those are the irreplaceable assets that are at risk in Uttlesford.
I think the problem with local arguments is inevitably they end up in not in my backyard, NIMBY type arguments. And my advice, and I think my view on local participation in the debate, on the consultation, is be involved. I think it really makes a difference that local voices are heard, both at local and national level. But I also would encourage people to think beyond their own backyard. Clearly, most people, given a situation where they're going to be subject to increased noise, potential effects on local air quality, property blight, are going to oppose infrastructural development. But I think what's interesting there is that those people have got to also take a view on aviation in general and strategy nationally. So I think there needs to be answers to two questions. If you don't think that new infrastructure should be provided local to Stansted, should that capacity be made available somewhere else? And if so, where should that capacity be?
We are concerned to protect our local environment here, and to the point that we're often referred to as NIMBYs. And I say, yes, of course we are, but it isn't my backyard, it's thousands of backyards that we are protecting here, and this has to be taken into account. So locally, we know what's at stake and we're defending it. Nationally, we work with others. There's an organisation, Airport Watch, which is under the Airport Environment Federation in London, and we meet periodically and discuss what emerge as joint problems, the proposals for major inland airports, be they here, Gatwick, Heathrow, Cliff, Coventry. It is a matter, I think, of sustainability at the end of the day. And as you well know, that's a very hackneyed word. And I always recite something that came from the Department of Environment. It's a matter of balancing environmental impacts with economic advantage, and importantly, giving a positive legacy of opportunity and quality of life for future generations. I think all these things have got are there when one talks about sustainability. It may well be that no options are sustainable in the true sense of those words.
So even as the consultation process itself was underway, some stakeholders were already signalling that the debate should have been national rather than regional. Mark McLennan again.
It's really a national debate on the role of aviation generally. Is aviation technology a good idea? If it's a good idea, is it a good idea to make it widely and cheaply accessible? If that is a good idea to have cheap, very easily accessible aviation, what impacts does that have, both economically and environmentally and socially?
Regional pressure groups like Stop Stansted Expansion had begun to marshal arguments questioning the assumptions for growth, which had been used in the options presented to the consultation. Norman Mead.
The industry does not recover its external costs completely. People are concerned that it pays no VAT on aircraft fuel, on aircraft purchases, on aircraft spares, and on anything that operates on the air side of an airport. They're concerned that it pays no environmental tax at all. They're concerned that the current figures are artificially influenced by the cheap flight airlines and do not see the economics of that in the long term. So we feel the demand has been artificially stimulated by these cheap flights. The bubble may well burst, and thus we feel we should look very much more closely at the figures quoted here over the next few years. But nonetheless, we recognise that demand will increase. We're saying make the best use of present facilities as stage one. And here, this worries us a bit because the government's declared policy is the full use of all existing facilities before any new runways are built. And we're concerned, and we're waiting to see the impact of the 25 million passengers worth of activity that is currently authorised here, let alone the 40 that will come from the full use of the single runway.
The pressures on the government from those outside the regional consultation were fast becoming apparent to Mark McLennan.
Industry has responded with a very large lobbying effort to government under the banner of Freedom to Fly, where it's pointed out in no uncertain terms to government the benefits that the industry feels that it brings and the requirement that it has for new infrastructure capacity. So that coalition, organisations like the CBI, are making very strident noises to government that this new airport capacity, particularly in the southeast, is required. They recognise that it brings with it environmental issues. They want those issues to be recognised and managed, but nevertheless to press full steam ahead on wholesale development. At the other end of the debate, and I would take Jonathan Porritt and Forum for the Future of good examples of this position, which would say that predict and provide is thoroughly discredited. If aviation was to take that strategy on board, it would be a fallacious strategy, and that indeed what Forum for the Future would be suggesting is a much more targeted, demand-managed-led approach, which would very much look at the current economics of the way aviation operates. And it would argue that at the moment the industry does not pay its external environmental costs. And I think a lot of the debate actually is about if and how the industry can do that. Much is made of the fact the industry is exempt from aviation fuel tax, for example, and it's in fact very unlikely there'll ever be agreement on an aviation fuel tax. But leaving that aside, there are many other mechanisms that could be brought into place which would ensure that aviation would meet those environmental costs. And I think that's going to be a very important part of the debate and is certain to be considered, I think, in the white paper.
So after the consultation had wound up and the white paper finally landed, how did the critics react? Peter Ainsworth MP, chair of the Commons Environmental Audit Committee, questions the value of the whole consultation process.
I think what happened was that the prompt that got the whole aviation white paper process underway was the industry's desire to grow and to meet demand. And as a result, it was that purpose which the entire process was set up to serve. And one wonders about the value of a consultation when the direction that the government was clearly taking was so set, the course was so set already, that actually it was going to be always going to be virtually impossible for anyone who wanted to shift the trajectory in a different direction to make any impact at all. And so we had a huge, cumbersome regional consultation process around an issue where I think the mindset had already gelled before the thing got underway.
Richard Dyer, aviation officer for Friends of the Earth, agrees that a lengthy and detailed consultation process, which elicited a vast response, in the end seems to have had no bearing on the outcome of the white paper itself.
I think the government could have been more honest about the issues like the economics, the fact that there was a downside to aviation growth, and a vast number of people did reply to the consultation. I believe it was the largest response ever seen to a public consultation. And many, many of those, we know, were raising big concerns about the government's approach, and yet not much notice seems to have been taken of that in the government's thinking in the white paper. They talked broadly about wanting to make aviation sustainable before the white paper was published, but there's not really a lot of evidence of that in the finished article. It's pretty much a predict and promote, because the government doesn't directly provide the infrastructure, so we call it a predict and promote. They've actually forecast the growth and pretty much decided to meet all of it, which is a very different approach to the one they traditionally have applied to road transport, where demand management is really an effective plank of public policy. If you recalculate the growth projections based on aviation fuel being taxed and VAT being added to aviation, which isn't paid at the moment, you see dramatically different growth figures, and the government's own computer model shows that. And they did those calculations before the white paper was published. But there was no mention of that process or those new projections in the white paper itself. You know, that could have been a choice that people had to make in the consultation, because the figures were so dramatically different for including those assumptions about taxation that it actually meant that no runways would need to be built. But those choices weren't presented to people in the consultation. If we applied fair taxation to aviation, we would be looking at a completely different story.